This presentation was recorded at the Western Fellowship Teachers Institute. For more information about the Institute, call 541-999-7467 or email jolasmucker@gmail.com. That's jolasmucker@gmail.com.
So welcome here. You're in this class on benefiting from achievement tests. How many of your schools give these? Great. Great. Have to check. Right. Well, the goal of the topic is to explain what they are, why you give them, and hopefully in that process we can learn how to benefit from them. And this is a more technical topic. It's about creating data, interpreting that data, listening to the story that data tells. And in this topic, of course, let's not forget what our most important asset is. It's not data. Now, the most important asset of the achievement test process is indeed data. Our most important asset is our students. So let's keep that in mind while we speak highly of achievement tests. While let's keep the main thing, to bring students up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I'm fascinated by achievement tests. In fact, I'm really fascinated by achievement tests. To me, this is always an exciting thing about the end of the year to get those test results back. So I am wondering if you know what does your school use for achievement tests? What producer?
California.
All right, California Achievement. CAT, CAT test, 1970 edition, very likely.
Yep.
All right. Jerry, did you have an opportunity for one of these little papers? My wife will give you one. Is there anybody that uses something other than the 1970 California Achievement Test? There are some others that have been used in our Christian Day schools, but it seems like, especially in the last decade, those have become less and less used because Alan Troyer with Testing Services out of Elida, Ohio, has developed grading scoring for the California Achievement Tests, which many schools are using. And so it helped to popularize the California Achievement Tests. All right, well, let's move into this little worksheet here. I have blanks. It's nothing hard. Hope you're not offended by its simplicity. But what are achievement tests? First of all, they are standardized tests. Standardized tests. And what we mean by that is they're not part or twin to any particular curriculum set, such as Rod and Staff, Becca, Bob, James, Christian Light. They've been devised independently of that curriculum set. And what we mean by standardized also is that they're designed for any student in any situation, in any curriculum, and any type of teaching method. And that way they're standardized. And that's why our schools are using them across the board, even though we're not using all the same curriculums or have all the same teaching methods and so forth. Their goal simply is to measure academic performances in the three basic academic areas, math, reading, and language. That's what we mean by standardized. Further, secondly, they're comprehensive tests. Comprehensive in that they cover math, reading, and language. And those are recognized everywhere universally as the basic to all academic endeavor. If we have mastery in these three areas, then we're considered to be educated, at least on an elementary level. Educators recognize these tests everywhere as being a reliable index as to what is considered to be a well-rounded basic education. And what I mean by these tests, achievement tests, standardized testing, your state probably has its own. The 1970 California achievement tests are not really used anymore in public education. Right, further, they're norms-based tests. Norms-based is probably where we begin to misunderstand these tests the most, or perhaps your patrons or students especially do not understand this thing of norms-based. Norms-based means that we compare the student's performance to tables of standard performance. So we don't give a 93% B+ on an achievement test. There is no grade like that generated. That would be what's called criterion-based testing. Criterion-based testing simply says, okay, we've taught you these areas of fractions in math. Now we're going to give you a test, and it will show whether you can add, multiply, subtract, divide, and use fractions in reading problems. Criterion-based testing goes on to say, well, you got 93% accuracy on that. based on 100% accuracy. Norms-based, yes, we check those tests to tell which ones are wrong, but then instead of giving a grade that says this is how many you got correct out of 100, rather we say this is how well you did in relation to other students. Okay? And in that way, they're norms-based. Right? Totally different ball game. Norms-based tests are grading in relation to other students' average performance. See? And there lies the big difference. All the achievement test grades that we're going to be discussing today, and all achievement test grades, period, are norms-based grades. They're not criterion-based grades. It is all according to rank, see, of based on performance. How are these norms tables established? It's quite a fascinating story for any norms-based test, and that's probably the reason why we don't have, at this point, we don't have any conservative publisher-produced test, because the accuracy of a norms-based test is dependent upon a broad input to develop the norms-based grading system. 203,600 students were given the tests to develop the norms-based tables for the California Achievement Test. Over 203,000 students. And it was a two-year process, 1967, 1969. All 50 states, there was care taken to be sure we got students from all 50 states. It was care taken to be sure that we got cross sections of varying community types, urban, small town, rural. Catholic schools would be the ones that probably most closely represent our schools. All this data was then compiled to make these norms tables. And thankfully, due to Alan Troyer's work and skill with a computer, we now no longer have to go across all these tables in the back of the books and manually score them. Rather, he can access all those norms tables for whatever level you're giving and print out a very attractive report, a very informative report. Any questions on the first consideration, what are achievement tests? Any further clarification that you would like to offer or request?
Maybe this isn't the place to ask this question, but why is the 1970 test less objective? A test with less objective content, is that why that our communities have stuck with that one?
All right, what would you perceive the answer to that question to be? Why have we stuck with the 1970 edition? I can think of several reasons, but I'll open it up.
And that's a 40-year-old test.
Yes. Yes.
Aren't they kind of getting dumber?
All right, aren't they kind of getting dumber? Yes, I would say that they are kind of getting dumber.
About the students?
No, requirements, our state requirements are getting kind of dumber. Another reason would be simply because we've come to trust this test. To be changing our norms-based tests too often, in fact, to change it at all is almost unsettling to me. Let me just share this story. This fits almost anywhere. I intended to share it further down, but we had a gentleman from the public school came to our church, and he ended up joining our church. But at the time that he joined our church, he had taught public school for approximately 30 years. And so, of course, he was very interested in what are you Mennonites doing in your schools? And some, I mean, he was very gentlemanly, very courteous sort of individual. But he was like, you know, aren't you all supposed to be out there farming squash? You know, how can you know that what you're doing is really, like, effective? And I said, well, we do give standardized achievement test. Oh, okay. And he said, may I ask which one it is? What do you use? And I told him to use a California 1970 edition. He basically flipped out. He was like, I didn't know you could still get that. Yeah, we can still get it. And I said, what, do you have an opinion of it? He said he thinks that that was the best. And he said he still hears discussion in secular settings and conferences that he attends that that was one of the best standardized tests ever produced in the United States. Nice. What do you think his next question was going to be? How do your students do on that test? Right? Now, I probably did something maybe wasn't the best thing to do, but we were having the discussion in school. I said, would you really like to know? And he said, oh, yes. I said, here's the file drawer. Right? And I opened up the file drawer and just let him go. And about 40 minutes later, it was all it took to validate completely our whole approach to school. Right? He was enough of an educator to realize what material and what data he had access to. And from that on, he became one of our best proponents of our approach for schooling. He was on curriculum panels for developing curriculum in the public schools. He'd take our textbooks and say, but here's some fourth grade math textbooks. This is what they're doing in fourth grade in some schools. Right? But it all started with that conversation I just told you about. That to me was a very powerful event. All right, you ready to move on? Let's go then, how do they work? Well, they work by testing the three major academic areas of an elementary education. Mathematics goes with number one there. And then mathematics is broken down into three areas, computation, concepts, and problems. Okay, and then you get grades for each one of that subcategory. Right? You also have grades for the total battery. Battery meaning set, or, set. Okay. And then in reading, number two, reading both vocabulary and comprehension is tested. And probably in reading, that's where there's some objectionable material. It's not highly objectionable, or at least mildly objectionable. It is something that is sort of fueling some interest in developing achievement tests, norms-based testing from a conservative viewpoint. And then language, number three. Language is about capitalization, punctuation, usage and structure, and lastly, spelling. Right. Now, I did give you that table on the back of your handout. That is the total battery. That's the whole set. And we'll peruse this further later. But it can be very helpful to be able to, if you want to see how a student is doing in, say, mathematics, comparing year to year and so forth, then you don't use a total battery score, of course. Now, I really believe that every teacher and at least one school board member can become proficient in interpreting these test results. And it really is not that complex. I would suggest that if you would spend one evening with the examiner's manual instead of Reader's Digest, you'll get on the map. You'll at least learn the map, right? Spend that second evening, you could be saying and putting together the same information that I've simply arranged for you here today. All right, so let's go to the next part about by interpreting how do these achievement tests work. By interpreting the resulting test data in four different scoring methods. Now, some of the reason that we don't make achievement tests, I suppose anyway, your school isn't making achievement tests readily accessible to anybody, is because these scores are so grossly misunderstood. If you don't understand a score, and if you're going to be saying, well, I had a 93 percentile, so that means it's 93%, well, there could be greater harm done in that situation, right? But if you don't understand how to interpret the data, it actually becomes dangerous, right? Or at least not helpful. So the first type of score off of which the others are built, first one is percentile rank. And that simply means that the student is ranked in a percentile group on a scale of 1 to 100, right? So in other words, the poorest performing student would be at a number 1. The best performing student would be at number 100, okay? So if you got a 50 percentile rank, that means you are perfectly average. Couldn't be better, couldn't be worse as far as average goes. You're right in the middle of that control group, right in the middle of the norms, the way the norms group was established, okay? The second is stannine, and this one I personally think is not even worth our sniffing at, hardly, because the student is ranked in a percentile group instead of 1 to 100, it's 1 to 9, duh. Okay. So what we've just done is we've sacrificed a whole bunch of accuracy, and maybe if a one-digit number is good enough for you, fine, but you have to get the percentile rank to be able to get the stannine, so I'd say don't worry about it, it's not worth your time, all right? Now, number three is a grade equivalent, and this is the one that has caused problems Here, the student is given a year and a month number equivalent to the average student performance of that year and month. So you may do the test to come up with a grade equivalent with a 7.6, I think is what I have written on your paper here. That means that this student, regardless of what grade they were in, regardless of whether they were a 10th grader or a 3rd grader, they performed as well on this test as somebody that was in the 7th grade, the 6th month of that education. Okay, so you kind of, that one is really easy to understand. And it's a golden egg that we reach for very quickly because it's really nice. Because it tells us, it's so concrete. You know, I'm doing as well as 7.9, right? Now, the danger in this, though, is if a student is perfectly average, let's review a little bit. If they're perfectly average at the end of the 7th grade, they should be getting a 7.9 grade equivalent, right? But what percentile rank is that? 50. Exactly. Now, if you've been around these achievement tests and that percentile ranking and actual students and tried to compare reality, 50 is not an acceptable grade. I have never taught at a school, and I really hope I never teach at a school that the average is a 50 percentile. I would be one frazzled teacher, all right? Really, most of our Mennonite schools are, if you would, it'd be a good question for Alan Troyer, but I'm just going to guess that our conservative Anabaptist circles, and maybe even including homeschoolers, he has data for those two, separate data pool. But I'm guessing of our Mennonite Anabaptist church-operated schools, at least a mid-70s percentile. Right, and if you flip over the paper, you can see that on the back. The percentile is the number on the left. Look what's happening, 99, 99, 98, 96, 90, 90, 90. All right, get down to student G. There's a student that was challenged, it really needed a teacher. 71, 68, 64, 64. I would think it likely that if your student only got a 50 percentile, they're probably in most settings they would have been retained to repeat the grade. Right. Is there some confirmation of that? I see some heads nodding. I think that's about where it is. Right. And then the next question, of course, is why is it that way? Well, I would like to simply say I think it's a blessing of God. Really, I do. And if you want to get more specific, I think it's because we're working with children from disciplined homes. That's huge. We're not working with children whose minds have been stunted by too much television, right? And so on. We're working with children who respect is something that's taught them from the days that they're held as an infant in the arm. All those things, I think, affect that number. I'm not so sure. Sometimes we hear talk that the public school is doing such a poor job. I'm not sure, but I think the public school may actually be doing a better job than we are, given the raw material that they have to work with. I just suggest that. I think that's actually very likely. Now, where were we? Well, we were talking about grade equivalent. Okay, yes?
May the grade equivalent though have some more measure of accuracy in the lower levels, grade 1 and 2?
Yes, thanks for bringing that up. I had that on my notes. In the lower levels, the grade equivalent is definitely more accurate. But when, I guess I was coming from the perspective of more the upper grade level, there it begins to run wild and students can get drunk on that information if they have it. But on the lower levels, it is definitely more accurate. But the further you go through the whole data bank, why the more wildly the numbers vary. And I've seen 13.9, which is the highest that you can test. I've seen that repeatedly in our schools. And that didn't mean that they got 100% on the test either. Right? I've seen that as probably about the 7th grade. I've seen 13.9 starting to pop up. In other words, they're bumping the top of the norms table data. Yes?
Students, along with that, students on the 50th percentile that are failing, I was nodding and agreeing with you, because of lower grades. And I think that holds more true for lower grades also.
Okay.
Then it wouldn't be lower grades. Okay. In the lower grades, you see a child below 60, they're probably failing or nearly failing.
All right, so there you have it again. Now, one of the things that we can do is we can make a new set of norms tables. And Alan Troyer is doing that. Well, his computer is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he, on his results, then he will give you if you want them. Some people, and if this is the setting in which you find yourself, you need to respect it. Some people feel it's comparing yourself among yourself too much. And the Bible says that's not wise. I really don't think that that's what was the original intent of that verse. But he's developing his own norms tables based on the tests that he has graded. And it tells you every year how many he's graded in that particular level. It's thousands, but it's not 200,000. It's probably much less than 10% for each level. He may have graded 20,000 tests by now. I suspect he did. Yes.
One other comment on that 50 percentile. I think it's important that we remember not to use these grades to decide whether the student should pass or not. Because there can be students that are passing that just flip out in these tests.
That's right.
For various reasons.
Right.
Maybe even not organizational skills, not able to understand well how to do them,
right.
Although they're very simple. I almost say these should never be used to influence whether a child should pass. We should have other data to determine that.
So you wouldn't look at the achievement test, or if there's a discussion about passing and fail, you would rather the achievement test isn't even brought up on the table, or maybe you're not quite saying it that hard?
I would. It might be an element of the discussion, but it should be really minimized.
Somewhere under 10%.
It might be a confirmation of where things are.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it is testing the school, mm-hmm. and it not the student.
Right. That I really agree with. Probably not as heartily as you do. But yeah, but I would say it needs to be kept down there below 25%, which really in the big picture of deciding to pass or fail.
I'd probably put below 10%.
Okay. Yeah, so. Yeah. We're same ball field. Yes.
So could somebody outline then what if we were to say what the purpose of the achievement tests are?
All right.
What's the purpose? Why do we even take them?
Why do we give them? And can we table that question until we get to that section? And that's a great question that was coming up in my own mind. I was like, I hope I'm going to talk about this. Oh, yeah. And then you ask. We'll get there. Let's talk yet about the fourth score. The fourth score is the Achievement Development Scale score. If that's too much of a mouthful, just call it ADSS. Right? Here, what happens is a student is given a three-digit number, the lowest being 100, the highest being 900, and that represents their test results on a ladder of academic development. So what's happening is your first graders are way down there on the lower rungs of that scale 1 to 900, and your 10th graders or your upper graders are climbing that ladder. Now what I've seen happening in our conservative Anabaptist schools is most of our first graders are scoring probably an average of 300, all right? So that means, let's just draw the ladder, and I don't have near enough rungs in. We're coming in here about 300. And there are some rungs below that yet, okay? In the Russian school where I'm teaching now, I don't know that I've ever seen a student at 300, but I would contribute that mainly to the language. They don't know the language. And so I'm not too terribly concerned about that because their pool of knowledge, we simply don't test it.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't testing Russian on the California achievement tests, right? But 300 is still not far off, right? So now, if we're going to stop at the 10th grade, why then most of them, I personally like to see them exiting approximately at 750. Okay? There's some that don't. There's a few students I've had that have exited in the low 600s, and those you feel a sense of personal failure about. And then I've seen some exiting over 800. And there's, you know, have some senses about also. But you get the idea. All right, now let's just do the math. If you're coming in at 300, you're at the end of the first grade, and if you want to exit at 750, if you add 50 points a year in the next 9 years, you know, second, third, fourth, you have 9 years to test. And if you're going to exit at 750, that means you need to gain 50 ADSS points a year. That is the increment of a year's worth of education, okay? So to me, the most fascinating score is this one, because I can look at my students' previous achievement tests, which Troy will print for you on the same paper. I can look at my previous year where they were. They may have been at, whatever, 350. And where are they now? See? And if they've gained their 50 points, I'm feeling very happy about that, right? If they're not gaining 50 points, why, then you have some other feelings, okay? Now, there's going to be wobble. And I have actually had some students go backwards. And that is really deflating if you take these tests as seriously as I do, right? It happens. It happened one time for me when there was a girl that came into the sixth grade. She was part of a family of girls. She had a very reticent father, very laid back. And of course, you know, I'm more in your face, you know, on the one side of the chart there probably this morning. And I flat scared her stiff. It took me a long time to realize that I was simply scaring her so bad that it was affecting her education. She was really a good student. Really, really a good student. And finally, when someone else helped me realize that I'm scaring her, and the more that I'm working on her problems, the more it scares her. Just give her space. Back off. Things leveled out. The next year on achievement tests, why we gained more than 2 years worth. Two years. We gained more than 100 points. So that made me feel better. Right. Oftentimes you'll see a student that maybe they will gain, you know, 20 points, and then the next year it's 60 or 80. I've had students that, like I mentioned, gain more than 100 ADSS points, but they won't sustain that kind of growth. It just simply isn't happening. It doesn't happen. If they have a big year, then next year that's not so big. Right? So that's something to keep in mind as you consider these scores. Shall we go right back to the, I was planning to do this at the end of the, towards the end of the class. One, having just gone across the scores, let's do that now. Let's flip around to the back of that paper. And let's just look at student A. Okay, I only started collecting data for this student in grade 6. Grade 6, they were 606. Grade 7, moving across the paper to your left on student A, was 668. So do the math, he gained 62 points. Good year. All right, 668 to 755. Another great year. That was actually better than the previous one. Right, but then look what happens between 8th and 9th. It flatlined a little bit, 755 to 777. Student G. Challenge student, grade 5, they scored 487. You see it here. Next year, 486. And here comes Brother Dan's advice. If we're going to go by the achievement test, that student absolutely should repeat, hands down. Look at the next year. How good is your mental math? 69 points? Yeah, that was a good year. Next year, not so much. But look where they are in the percentile rank, though, also. This was definitely a more challenged student. This is actually live data from some of my students. I don't remember which one that was. But it was probably one that needed a teacher. You see what happens with the percentile rank. I have the percentile ranks also. They become a little more meaningless because they're always bumping the top. And so it's not as valuable of data. To me, the most valuable data is the ADSS score. Now, of course, the next part, what I've done here is I enjoy getting the class average percentile and the total battery, the entire set. Okay? So this year, according to this chart, it was not my... This is old data. 90, and you see what was happening, what was trending. You see what's trending here in our school? That's the blessing of the Lord. Datified, if that's a word. Okay. But to go from 81 to 90, that's not small potatoes. Right? And if you look at the class average ADSS gain, that one really I regard as turning the spotlight right here on my own effectiveness. The percentile rank, that's a little bit different. That's we're more getting a pulse of the school. The ADSS gain, that is completely my pulse. Right? So 63. That's in my mind tremendous. And that year you might as well go out and buy yourself the biggest chocolate dinner you can find.
Mm-hmm.
All right. 41, 49. I've had some years that were 30. Right? Years that I worked the hardest, probably. Oh, there was more I was going to say about all that. Forget what it was.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What's the correlation between the ADSS and the GE?
The grade equivalent and grade equivalent?
Doesn't the GE also indicate
it, academic achievement? It does. Relating to the upper grades, I personally hardly look at grade equivalent. But the grade equivalent and the ADSS, of all these parrot each other because they're all intertwined. They're all based on the percentile rank, right? So when we're seeing, if you have a student here with a percentile rank of, I'm just kind of shooting off of, off the hip as it were. I think if you have a student with a percentile rank 97 or above, they're probably going to be at 12, 13 grade equivalent, which, so what do you do with that information? I mean, yeah, especially if they're in the 8th grade. Exactly. I'm coming at this from working at it from the upper grade level. Using grade equivalent on a lower grade level, I really can't speak for. Yeah, another. I remember what I was going to say about the ADSS gain number. I think I maybe mentioned this already here before at this conference this year, but I'm going to say it again in this context, in this class, that I had a student who was really, really struggling in math. She never enjoyed math, and she came from a homeschooling situation where the parents were right ready to admit, look, she didn't like math, we didn't really either, and we didn't try to make her like it. And so she came to us in seventh grade, and we drug her through the seventh grade. And she basically failed the math course using that 70% number, right? And I don't remember what her ADSS number was in math, but it was way down there, right? And so what we were like, what do we do? Because she wasn't really failing the rest of school, so we decided to retain her in the math only. And we repeated the seventh grade math, and she had a great year in math. She had been there, done that before. She cruised along through it fairly well. At the end of that year, we gave her the achievement test again. And you know what I went for by now, right? I went for that ADSS score. How much incremental learning was there in math, right? And she had gained, if I remember right, it was like 130 ADSS points in math. And that gave me a measure of confidence in, number one, the validity of the approach of what we did. And also that she's set to succeed from here on out. And indeed she did. It worked out. Right? And that's some of the reason that I respect this data, because I see it correlating with real life. It's not like, oh, now that's a real surprise. Occasionally that happens, because there is always the tummy ache and there is those other features that Dan mentioned. It is not a long period of testing. It's only like you can really get it done in one day. I would recommend doing it in 2 days simply to keep the pressure off, spread that out a little bit so you don't have such concentrated pressure. But there are variables, more variables when we're just dipping in for such a short period of time, that those need to be reckoned with. But at the same time, I do repeat that they are accurate data. Is there more question? All right, let's go then to the next part. Why do we give them? Maybe I should Well, no, I've already said, how do they work? I had written and scribbled in my own paper, they work very well. So. All right, why do we give them? I have two blanks, and perhaps you want to suggest a third. The first that I have here is accountability, for accountability. There's three different areas of accountability here we're concerned about. The one is institutional accountability. In other words, is a school achieving that which it set out to do? Another I would have is teacher accountability, which we'll talk about some more. And the last one, any guesses? Student. All right. I think that one is not as important as the other. But let's talk a little bit more about institutional accountability. Some of us here in this room are business owners, likely. If you're an owner of a credible business or involved in a credible business, well, you're going to want to know how well you're doing. Right? And there's a tremendous amount of time, money, resources spent to collect data about business activity. That's the equivalent in school can be considered the achievement test. It becomes a business summary, a school business summary. And something is wrong, I would suggest, when our businesses have the latest and the greatest accounting programs and are paying accountants lots of money, a whole lot more than a school teacher likely, to get business data, but then take a lackadaisical approach to achievement tests. Something's goofy. It needs adjustment. And I think that, really life itself is going to be grading us. And I think, we can see that pattern in life. Any worthwhile human endeavor will be able to be critically analyzed. And if we don't do it at school, well, then life itself will be the analyst, and maybe it will accuse our insincerity about education. And I see achievement tests as just a really good way to be this accountability that we all need. And the Bible does say, study to show thyself to be approved. In the subject at hand here, it's approved unto God, and that's we understand that. Workman that needeth not to be ashamed, and so on. Evaluation, you see, is inferred in the scripture. And I think another thing that fits right here with institutional accountability. Right now we're given a tremendously free rein as schools in what we do, so far as government interference goes. Now, you remember that story I told you about a real true blue educator who actually went into our school files and looked at our achievement test results? Right? There may be coming a day when that may save the day. I personally think that one of these days I'm going to hear that in Iowa or Oregon or Washington or Pennsylvania, the school officials came in there and stormed the building, so to speak. I'm amazed that this didn't happen already. What are you fellows doing? I want to know where the achievement test results are of any school that I'm intimately acquainted. Right? I want to know where those are. Also, a little side note is, I think that we should keep track of our students if they do any educational programs beyond that, such as if they take a GED. You really need to have that in your files also, the GED results. That one, to me, is just as important as the achievement test results, because the general education diploma really is what your state is saying, yeah, this is what we establish as a benchmark for a well-rounded minimum for 12th grade education. Right? And our students... as a whole, in our conservative settings, by the time they get through the ninth grade, some of them in the eighth grade, and almost certainly without fail the 10th grade, almost certainly, they don't have a problem with the GED. And I think we better be forward thinking enough now to be getting that data, because someday we may need it. That's my own little hobby horse there. And this is a third party. Again, I would stress that. This is a third party. It's not that, we produce the math course and we produce the tests that go with the math course. This is someone else saying how well we're doing. And that's priceless. See. All right, the second one here is teacher accountability. Achievement tests have been called the teacher's report card, and rightly so. I think you understand that. Scores might dip and often dip when a new teacher is hired. But if the scores continue to slide and continue to go down, here's the school board's opportunity to get insight on that. Right? And I appreciate very much, after I talked for, I believe it was 4 years, the school board came to me and said, you know, we checked over your achievement test results, and every year you taught so far, it slipped a few points in the class average percentile. Well, that's not what you want to hear. All right? And I was like, I mean, it really set me back in my honkers to thinking, and this is some of the reason why I'm into achievement tests. Right, because someone else was and used it effectively. Right, and so what I did is I started getting out my own. I went to the files too. I laid out a whole bunch of achievement tests, and sure enough, they, number one, I checked their accuracy of their report. It was right. It was true. Right, but I there was two things that saved me. The one was is I could. Establish that the students that were coming into my room were poorer average students than the ones that had been there. Okay, so what material I was getting fed was pulling down the class average. Okay, now the other thing that saved me is the difference between an average and a median. Okay, so if you use the average as a statistical tool for developing a way to interpret that data, it gives one story. And if you use a median, it gave another. All right, so now, you know what the difference between average and a median is. An average, you understand, like you simply add up and divide by the number of input data. Median simply means you rank the data from highest to lowest. And then you pick the middle one. The median of the road means middle. Okay, so you pick the middle one. So you rank all these, 99, 99, 98, 96, 95, whatever, 80, 76, 20, 16. Okay, you pull all those off, all right, and you find the middle one. In my situation, if we use the median, every year that I taught, it went up a little. Okay, that's why we distrust statisticians. because they can make it say whatever you want to say. But I wasn't trying to pull the wool across anybody's eyes. And remember what I told you, how I was getting the students that were coming into my room. Most of the students were good, but when you get a few very poor students, they're pulling down that whole average. But the median, it threw them out. See, it also threw out my best students. What do I have on that paper? Is this the median or the average? I think I have average, right? I lost my paper. Does it say average or median?
Average.
Average. I don't know, average still feels better. Now, we were talking about teacher accountability. And the teacher accountability was used by that school board with me. It was used very effectively. And I only applaud what was done there. All right, the third one is student accountability. Students, I think, feel accountable too. Those achievement tests do bring some accountability on them. I know in our school, anyway, in all the schools that I've taught, there is a culture of, you know, anticipation for the achievement tests, and we're really going to try hard, and, you know, teacher might bring in some juice and talk about getting extra rest and all this, and that's all good. We want to keep it that way. But the students do feel that accountability, and it's good for our students to be expecting that and anticipating that. Here a few years ago, when the California Achievement Test began to be hard to get, there was a school that I knew some of the folks at, and the school board chairman, oh, we dropped them. And I cannot I find that very unacceptable for what it would do to the students alone. That, well, we're just not going to worry about that anymore. Right? Now, that helps me understand that there is that thing of a student accountability that is good. Right? And I think it's right. It's good that we present these tests to our students as being important, as being useful. And it will help the students apply themselves and so on. But I am wondering, is there anybody here who allows the students to see the achievement test results? It's basically understood as a no-no. And what about parents? Really go ahead. Joel.
I think we really have one way or the other.
But if your students
they're
were to
in,
ask?
They're in a place where they're not supposed to look at them. Mm-hmm. Special.
They would feel like they're trespassing or violating.
They better.
They
should. Yeah. Yeah. If you read the instructions that come along with achievement tests, if you order achievement test material, it tells you to keep them under lock and key and such. Probably most of our schools aren't doing that. I don't think it's good to give these to the students because of what I mentioned before, simply because they don't know how to relate to the, they don't know how to understand the story that the grades are telling, simply because it's a norms-based rather than criterion-based. And also, it becomes a ranking thing that I don't really think that, it's one thing for adults to know that information, it's another person, it's another thing for a student to know, I got better than you on my achievement test. Right? I'm already uncomfortable when I see students' heads together on report card day. Mm-hmm. And there's some schools that have policies about that. I think achievement tests all much so much the more. We shouldn't be comparing results. All right, let's go on then to the other reason. Maybe it's closely related and maybe it's suggested by the first, but that's simply assessment. Assessment. And we're talking here about measuring the progress of the student. I made the blank long enough there. I hope you can get that written in there. The progress of the student, that's, remember this ADSS score. That's what it's doing. It's measuring progress and measuring the effectiveness of the teacher and measuring the soundness of the institution. All right, that's all that I'm prepared for. If you want more discussion, it's your class.
What's that Alan Troyer do that you were talking about? I'm not familiar with that.
What Alan Troyer does is he sends you out an answer form where the students fill in. You know, they circle or they fill in the, you know, the answer or the little bubble of their choice. Then you mail them back to him. He scans them into his computer, and the computer generates a report not only for that year, but also previous years for each student. And it's just nice. It has some graph, like he graphs previous years. I'm not exactly sure why, but his default setting is to graph grade equivalent. Every year I try to be sure that he changes that default setting to grade ADSS. Yeah. And I think your school should do likewise. I think it should ask for the ADSS to be graphed. Okay, so here we have the first grader. You know, it has all in fine. It ends out with total battery. You know, here was math average, here was language average, and so on. That was grade one. And grade two, you know, here it goes again, and oftentimes it's sort of parrot, sometimes going below, and it comes out here. And each one of those is in different colors. And so by the time you're getting to the upper grades, you have 7 lines across, 8 lines across, 9 lines across, and you can see at a glance where you were. How that student is progressing. And then besides that, there's tables and such. That's what Alan is doing. I think he charges, is it $2 a student? A little more than that now?
$5,
okay. I'm obviously not real concerned about the price.
It's worth it, though. I think it's worth every penny to have that on record.
And then the other thing he does is he does also, if you wish, give your students test results in relation to the other tests that he scored, other conservative Mennonite schools and Anabaptist settings. Now that's pretty interesting.
He's creating his own norms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now instead of always bumping the top, now we've suddenly moved those 90 percentile students down to 50. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I don't look at that very much. There was some other thought. Yes.
Well, you asked one question. I don't think you answered, and that's whether the parents should see the story.
Okay. You had something to say on that.
I don't think they should see the scores unless it's presented to them.
That's
with
right.
An interpretation, right? Because so few of them actually know what they mean.
That's right.
I think it's going back to the case when you're using the 10 or 25%. That at that point, you should be showing the parents the score and explaining what it means. Mm-hmm.
No, I agree perfectly with you on that one, brother. I do. I don't think that the parents should just be handed the achievement tests. Now I know that in some schools that's done. I think that any time that the tests go out of the hand of the school, there simply must be an explanation that accompanies that. Now, one year that I was teaching at a Mennonite school, they asked that I would review with each parent their students' achievement test scores. And before we did that, I had an explanation, just like I had here, what these scores are actually saying, explaining the difference between norms-based and criterion-based and so on. And then we proceeded to show them their students' results. It has happened, I think, just last year. One of the students transferred to another school or something, and they wanted transcripts and they wanted achievement test results. And there again, I was pretty sure that it wasn't I knew that the parents didn't understand, but I didn't feel comfortable handing them to the parents without an explanation first, even though it was going to supposedly to another school.
I got another question on that CAT 1970 edition baseline being around for 40 years.
Right.
Did they have achievement tests before 1970? Was there something made in 1940 that was better yet? I'm just asking.
Yeah.
And what does the local officials use now? If they're dropping 1970, will they even recognize the 1970 if you have them in your file?
1970 has been,
where are we going with that?
Right. That's a great question. 1970 has been dropped years ago by the public education circles. Is there something before that available? I don't know. I don't think that, from the way I would understand it, 1970 California Achievement Test was the first that really received the recognition that it did. I'm sure that there was, I'm almost positive, there would have been some before this. What's the one? IWAL. How does that one go? IWAL
Basic.
IWAL Basic. And what year?
Metropolitan went back to my school days.
Okay, so you had it when you were in school.
Metropolitan. It's a different achievement test.
Okay.
I don't see it much anymore.
Yeah. Well, there will probably be coming a day when the 1970 is not recognized by the generation of educators. At this point, it seems like it still is, as reflected in the story I just told you. Right. I'm kind of nervous about all that. I applaud Brother Troyer's effort in creating a new one, but at the same time, we can't create our own achievement tests and have the same austerity or whatever. Third party effect.
What is the frequency of, in your school, do you have achievement tests every year for every grade?
Every year, every grade, yes. I feel that's...
Some schools do it differently. Is there, they do it on odd number of years, or every 2 years, or is there a reasoning behind that, just because it's considered more of a bother than a necessity?
I can't speak for that. I suspect so. That would be my, what I would suspect, but maybe there's someone here to represent that approach.
It's cost.
Okay, it's cost. Right. Achievement tests really don't cost you anything if you hand score. It's a lot of work. It's not impossible, but it can be done. And I've done it for probably almost as many years as I sent to Troyer.
Well, it's 1-3, though they write in the book. And
that's true.
I'm unaware of answers she's developed.
Right. You're right. And the lower levels, grades 1-3, it is consumable material. Now, you did that answer your question? I thought there was another nuance there that wasn't addressed.
No, I mean, yeah, that pretty well answered. The only thought that I would have, you know, it's, you were talking about the norm-based, it's to compare, the idea of achievement test is to assess you with the other people around you.
Right.
So I would wonder why you wouldn't go with what the public school system uses now. Would be kind of just my, right. And I don't mean that in a, you know what I mean?
No, I know what you're saying.
And then you say, well, we're dumbing down, well, maybe we're done with using the 1970 if they were smarter in 1940. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I understand.
So what is the reason why we do achievement tests? Right.
We're already having difficulty getting our hands on this. This material was produced by McGraw-Hill. McGraw-Hill is a company of renown. Now, they themselves, I don't know exactly why, but they are very reluctant to give out the copyright for this test anymore.
Just on that point, Chris and I just got permission to print again, so they're going with it again.
Into the foreseeable future or
10 years?
10 years. Okay, it was a 10-year renewal, but McGraw-Hill was saying they were saying they're not gonna allow it to be reproduced. So if there was one in 1940, could we actually get our hands on it? Could we actually use it? And I suspect that the answer to that is, likely no. Or we won't have support material, we'd have to make our own support material. It seems like 1970 provides something we can get our hands on from back there that we could still have a support material for.
I'm satisfied.
Now, there was something else I was going to say about that, and it slipped me.
There is one thing about the more recent ones. They also reflect the trends in the culture that our Mennonite schools can't relate to, these movies and questions about that type of thing. Much more than the 1971 does. The modern educators recognize that the 1970 CAT is a tougher test than what is currently being given. And so it does have a higher esteem in their mind. I don't know if you told the story of your friend there.
Yes.
And how he immediately recognized they're scoring like that on 1970. Wow. So it does still carry a comparative degree, even though it's not exactly the same test.
And I'm going to go out on thin ice. I remember what I was going to say, but if I am guessing that the modern, I have not perused them, but the more modern achievement tests, I think there's some cultural literacy, you reminded me of that may be required to be able to score well on. And if you've taken any IQ tests recently, you might know what I'm talking about. Okay, if you take an IQ test today, it will ask you questions about Major League Baseball, who won the World Series, and such. I don't know that, and I don't need to know that, and I don't think that they ought to have those questions on there when they're testing my IQ. Thank you. You understand where I'm coming from, I think, right? Okay. But on the flip side, I can understand where they're coming from. What they're checking out is how wide does this guy have his eyes open? How much data in the world around him is he actually perceiving and remembering? So from their viewpoint, they have a perfectly valid reason to have that kind of stuff on there. The beauty of the California Achievement Test in many respects is its simplicity. What did we say we're testing? Three major areas. We don't even really get into science and history here.
Reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Reading, writing, arithmetic, right? And I'm certainly at least suspicious of what kind of flavors may come across with, you see that most of the norms-based testing is done on a state basis, and that changes in Washington State. It changes. How often would you say, Mr. Danny?
You mean
the WASL, the Washington.
I think since we've been up there, it's changed twice in 17 years.
Yeah, see, it's constant. They're always tinkering with it.
And I know in the state of Oregon, they weren't scoring high enough in the 10th grade, so they moved it to the 11th grade. I read that in the news. Now, I don't know whether that's accurate or not. So, hey, let's get these scores up some more that our students can pass and get their high school diplomas.
Yeah, see, and the California Achievement Test has not been tinkered with. And what I'm afraid what the public school is administrating has been polluted by tinkering, in my opinion. Thanks so much. You've been a great class. Lord bless you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.